Good afternoon. Meeting of the Ways and Means will come to order. Clerk will note the roll. There is a quorum. We have the minutes of the last meeting of May 10th before us. Any corrections, additions, or changes to the minutes? Representative Carlson moves approval of the minutes. Seeing no discussion, all in favor of the minutes being approved, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The minutes are approved. Members, a couple things. First of all, we will not be doing the claims bill today. Representative Anderson's father apparently is having surgery today, and so we keep him in our thoughts and prayers, and we will likely be having a Ways and Means meeting on either Monday or Tuesday to deal with that bill, a bill that Representative Solberg has dealing with inflation that we had discussed having an informational hearing on earlier, and probably some other bills that might be carried over from today. We're also not taking up Representative Smith's child custody bill today. There's a fiscal note issue that's being resolved on it. I am hoping we will also do that on Monday and Tuesday. And there are still a couple of other issues floating around on some of the other bills as well. But members, we will go as far as we can today, and then we will be announcing tomorrow what our schedule will be for either Monday or Tuesday. With that, I'd like to start out with Senate File 1368. The chair will move that Senate File 1368 be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. Representative Westrum, welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. This Senate file is just about an identical match to the House File 1344 that we passed out of the Regulated Industries Committee and several other committees dealing with energy and renewable energy initiatives and transmission line issues that currently our state faces possible constraints of transmission, and this bill will help streamline and bring some of the processes together, allow utility companies and those building transmission lines an ability to recover some of their costs earlier in the process as to not wait so long to start recovering the costs and pay the interest, and also have a larger amount to put on to the ratepayers at one point in time further down the process, which is currently what happens. There's also a good compromise provision dealing with community-based energy development that all the parties have worked out as a part of all the broad discussions of stakeholders that have all had an interest and a concern with this legislation, known as CBED, stands for Community-Based Energy Development. That is another provision in this bill that will help developers and negotiate front-loaded contracts with utility companies to install wind farms throughout the state of Minnesota. And so those are some of the big provisions in here. There's also several smaller provisions. One provision bill that was picked up in the Senate that had also passed in the House, but Representative Rukavina and other members of their Iron Range delegation dealing with the Laurentian Energy Project up there as well, and that's in this bill as well. So I would urge your support. There's part of the reason that brought it here. There's was a couple of fiscal note questions, and to my understanding, they have all been resolved and satisfied that there's not a negative or a fiscal impact with this bill.
Members, to the fiscal note issue, if you look at the fiscal note, one item you'll note is a $90,000 cost that's listed for the general fund. If you actually look through the bill and look through the fiscal note, that is due to a Minsky initiative where the language says Minsky is encouraged to do a study of a hydrogen fuel cell curriculum. And it doesn't actually require Minsky to do the study, it merely encourages them to do the study. And so I guess I don't myself really see this as a fiscal note expenditure in the sense that we're actually appropriating money. Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, I had a chance this afternoon to meet with some representative of the Minsky system, and that's exactly what they said, being that it was not a mandate that there be a particular outcome, that there really wouldn't be a cost. They're just requested.
Thank you for confirming that, Representative Carlson. questions for Representative Westrum or discussion? Representative Wagenius.
Yes, is it appropriate, Mr. Chairman, I know this is a fiscal committee, to talk about what this may mean for, this bill may mean for ratepayers, or is that off limits and we wait for the floor to ask that question?
Well, Representative Wagenius, I think past precedent would say that we have not exactly held other things off limits before.
Then I would like to ask the question about the consequences for ratepayers of this bill, and in some detail. What's going on for ratepayers here?
Representative Westrum.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'll just give some brief replies, and then maybe let Mr. Garvey from the department and maybe Rick Evans representing some of the utility coalition and business, perhaps the business chambers here as well. But Representative Wagenius, one of the things in this bill allows rate cost recovery sooner in the process for transmission line construction. That should be a positive impact for ratepayers, in that you don't have 1 or 2 or 3 years of capital borrowed money accruing interest that after 2 or 3 years of interest is accrued onto it, now you're paying interest on interest and you still haven't started paying off the principal, which means the ratepayers, there's an adjustment to recover that cost at some point in time anyways, and so it's a bigger cost waiting a couple of years. This doesn't allow recovery of infrastructure or transmission line construction costs that are anticipated but not built. They need to be hard costs that are incurred, and so that should be a positive effect for ratepayers. Maybe I'll let Mr. Garvey answer any further questions, and if you have other questions of other groups, that's they're right behind me, they can come up and talk as well.
Representative Wagenius.
Okay. Well, I think there are two questions here. So are these expansion of transmission lines always charged against ratepayers and not shareholders? Is that the message I'm getting from you, that it's always charged that way?
Representative, Mr. Chairman, Representative Wagenius, I think generally that might be true. However, we do have language in here. The PUC had talked to us early on about their concern that the ratepayers do not pay the portion of the cost of transmission line for energy that is on the wholesale market, maybe going to another state, being sold on the wholesale market, and we've given them adequate language and comfort that the rates assessed back to the ratepayers in Minnesota is truly for the infrastructure costs and the percentage proportion that they are benefiting from, not wholesale markets, not other costs. And so, Mr. Garvey, maybe you can supplement that.
Sir, could you state your name for the record and give us your testimony?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Edward Garvey, Deputy Commissioner of Minnesota Department of Commerce for Energy and Telecommunications. The utilities in this state, the investor-owned utilities in this state, can and do recover from ratepayers those costs related to the generation and delivery of the electricity that the consumers' ratepayers use. If they construct the power plant, construct the wires, those are part of those costs of generating and delivering, and those costs would be collected from ratepayers. In this bill, Mr. Chairman, if I may continue, this bill was framed by the three key points of energy policy that guide us: reliable, low-cost, environmentally superior power. We were very, very sensitive to the ratepayer costs. We also want to assure that it is very reliable. And, of course, we want to promote environmentally superior energy sources. We think that the components in this bill do that. It encourages investment in the infrastructure. It promotes environmentally superior energy through the seabed tariff and the hydrogen components and the soy diesel components. Those are the two sides of the things that we try to pay a lot of attention to. We think we've worked very, very hard to balance an array of competing sets of interests and stakeholders, and we've been able to do that and come to a very, very high level, highest common denominator compromise in this bill. And that's why when you see the members that are sitting behind Chairman Westrum and myself are not only the environmental communities, but the utilities and as well as the Chamber of Commerce with their ratepayer concerns specifically. So, Mr. Chairman, Representative Wiggins, I hope that that sort of addresses both the specifics of your question, but also some of the larger contextual components of your question.
Representative Gunther, to this point.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wiggins, typically the transmission costs are about 7% of your utility bills, and we're allowing the utilities to collect ahead of time, so when that cost, when that transmission is fully developed, that big additional surge of costs that will be hitting their bills will be much less, much more attenuated, so they won't go through the shock of a higher cost. That's why we're doing it the way we're doing it. Certainly, about a third of the transmission that we're developing are going to be for delivering renewables to the marketplace. And I think to say that the stockholders should shoulder this burden of $1 billion, I think would be very cumbersome. And if we don't have people buying the stock of our utilities that are stock-owned utilities, we certainly wouldn't have many investors. And if we didn't have many investors, we wouldn't have the improvements like we're seeing with natural gas instead of coal and some of those things that you and I very much wanted. So I think it's very important that they get to recover their costs so that we continue to have the things that Minnesotans enjoy and want to have.
Other discussion to the bill? Representative Dempsey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just noting that when we put in, and I'm just kind of new here now, but when we put in, I recall there was a study done in regard to wind energy.
Make money off of their
and what it would cost, and would it be an appropriate alternative to what has been used in the past.
It's just, we don't know what.
And the study that was done, it seems to me, was that wind energy should be used, and it is. Now I'm wondering, we're going to have another wind energy study, my understanding, in this piece of legislation, and I wonder why that is. Could you give me the rationale for that, or is that merely a regulation of somebody, or is it a study that needs to be done because there might be some deficiencies or efficiencies that can be used in the future?
Representative Westrum or Mr. Garvey?
Sure, I'll let Mr. Garvey offer some insight.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Edward Garvey again. We did, the Department of Commerce and the Reliability Administrator did conduct a study of the XL energy system for what it would take and what it would cost for that individual, that specific utility system to operate above 1,500 megawatts of power, of wind from wind. The study in the bill would ask that to determine the, and I'm reading here, the impact on reliability and cost associated with increasing wind capacity to 20% of the state's retail electric energy sales in 2020. It would be for all utilities providing electricity service in the state of Minnesota and at a higher amount. So we had a very good study that we learned some very, very valuable information on our largest utilities system at one level. The study that we're asking to be done in this bill is for it to be, is to do the same kind of study but applicable to all utilities at a higher level.
Okay, and Mr. Chairman?
Representative Dempsey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Will that continue every time? Every, we know now that the first time that there wouldn't be a problem from the study that was done, and so the wind energy was put online, all right? Now we're having a second study so we can, I'm assuming, increase that particular amount. Isn't the information that we gathered in the first study and the second study valid enough to increase it to 25% or to 30%? Or do we have to keep spending money on another study?
Mr. Darby.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Representative Huntsby. The XL system is different than the Otter Tail system, than the Great River Energy system, than the Minnesota Power system. Those systems also need to be addressed and thought about on a comprehensive level. This study takes the study and the learning that we did in the first study and elevates it statewide using also a higher level or higher amount of wind to be studied. And so we think we've done a great deal amount of learning for the one study. But to take that study and apply it across the board isn't appropriate. I think we need to take that study, elevate it across the board to all of them, and then we'll be able to come back and sort of say, here's what our systems, all that are integrated, all that are in our state, and how they could handle or not handle wind at 20%.
Okay, and one last question, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Dempsey.
And what might be the probability, or if it could be worked out, would it be possible for the University of Minnesota to do a study such as that? Would that be able to be completed?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Representative Dempsey. Page 19 of the bill, lines 22 through 24, basically say that they sell that the utilities working through the reliability administrator shall contract with an independent firm to conduct an engineering study on the impacts of reliability. The point is that we do expect an independent external entity to do that. Certainly the University of Minnesota may be the entity that could do this. There might be others that might also be able to do that. So the University of Minnesota certainly might be one of the entities that would be eligible to respond to the request for proposals to do this kind of study.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Osmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I would like to ask about Article 5. According to the fiscal note, it's showing that there's some costs to the Department of Natural Resources, but it also evidently states that they're expecting that cost to be absorbed by the department. I want to verify it. That's the situation. I just $205,000 is a little bit higher than what I had anticipated they'd be absorbing. That's quite a chunk.
Representative Westphal?
Any details about that?
Mr. Chair, let me consult to refresh my memory on that provision. It's been a while. Is Representative Rukavina here?
Yes.
Maybe you remember, maybe you can handle this. I'll talk to staff as well and see if they remember. But
Mr. Chair, Representative Osmond,
Representative Rukavina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was recalling, I don't know how, I see the fiscal note underneath here. I recall it being an estimate of around 100 and, it was 300 and some total, but wasn't it split between the university and who had agreed to do some work under that money that was appropriated to them from the PUC, and then I know that the utilities agreed to pay the Department of Natural Resources costs. I thought it was about $168,000, but I'm going by memory.
Okay. Mr. Representative Osmond, Mr. Chair, and Representative Rukavina, I think it's $175,000 says in the fiscal note, and that's about right, but I thought that the university was going to cover out of the funds that they had from a previous activity or the money that the legislature had presented to them for their renewable efforts, renewable studies, research, that sort of thing, they were going to dedicate towards us.
Right.
But the $205,000 that's in the fiscal note with regard to being absorbed by the department, that's a little bit of a surprise. I'm surprised it's that high. And I just wanted to bring it to attention so that we could... As I'll find more detail or more information on this, I think it's okay, but I just want to verify it.
Representative Solberg,
Chair,
to that point.
Representative Osmond, are you reading the first page as well of the fiscal note? The $205,000 for natural resources.
Get the Mr. Chair and Representative Solberg. I'm on page 8 of the fiscal note.
Yeah, well, that's reflected, Mr. Chair and Representative Osmond, on page 1 as well.
Yeah.
And I understand, if I understand this correctly, it's a special revenue fund, but then if you look at the revenues, I think they match that as well.
No, they're not that, yes.
That's my understanding of it.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Westrom.
Might have some people that can help explain this a little better, but as I understand it, the two cities' utilities are going to pick up part of this cost. The university has indicated they would pick up a portion of it, and the remainder would be within the DNR's operational budget. But
Bill and Mike, you guys want to... I think I'm satisfied, Mr. Chair. I can follow up on this later.
All right. Representative Wagenius. Oh. Other discussion? All right. Seeing no further discussion, I'll renew my motion that Senate File 1368 be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. The bill is passed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members.
Next, we'll take up House File 1161.
This one is
Representative Huntley moves that House File 1161 be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. Representative Huntley, would you care to explain the bill? I also know there are some amendments. I'm not sure if they're yours or if they're someone else's.
Well, they're Representative Abler's, but why don't I just give a general overview and then we'll get to the amendments.
That'd be fine.
This is, I was going to say ominous. I guess that's the right word. Health Licensing Board bill that involves about 10 different professions in this bill and 7 different boards. And there's many changes that have to do with the how these people are regulated. Most of the controversial things have been removed. Some of you may have got 1,000 emails from physical therapists and athletic trainers, and that part of the bill is no longer here, so they're both happy. There's a something minor thing in social work. There is some changes for reciprocity for respiratory therapists in the western part of the state. The hospitals are often in North Dakota or South Dakota, and the ambulances they send over and have respiratory therapists on them sometimes, and this would give them a reciprocal license. There was a long dispute between licensed professional counselors, alcohol and drug counselors, and three or four years ago we had a bill that grandfathered in a number of those people so they wouldn't have to take the new test or upgrade their educational levels because they had the on-the-job experience, and this extends that grandfather period for another year. Probably the most controversial thing in it was a dispute between audiologists and hearing aid dispensers, and if you don't know, audiologists also dispense hearing aids. Hearing aid dispensers only dispense hearing aids, and they don't do any audiology. And we've split those two groups so that they're now completely separate. That was somewhat controversial, but I think I know for sure the audiologists are happy, and I think the hearing aid dispensers are accepting of what happened. There are some other minor changes. I think since this is a Ways and Means Committee, you're probably more interested in the finances. And before we get to the amendment, there's a number of fee reductions in this bill that show up as a net cost to the Special Revenue Fund of $374,000. But you should know that that is because we've reduced the license fees in most cases. And there are surpluses in all these different boards. And if you reduce the license fees, then that starts to drain down the surpluses. So that in effect, there's really no cost to the state. There is a cost to the Special Revenue Fund, but it's coming out of these reserves. And if I could answer any questions now, or we could start with the amendments.
I don't see any questions. Why don't we start with the amendments? Mr. Representative Abler.
I move the A7 amendment.
Representative Abler moves the A7 amendment.
Mr. Chair, the bulk of the amendment starting on page 8 is the insertion of, actually just the moving around of the fee reduction from statute into, I would guess, session law about the social workers. It also adds in the fee reductions that the omnibus bill already has that's been through here. This has all been heard by this committee, all these reductions. Section 2 and Section 3 on page 2 just references those fee reductions so that they can be carried in two places so that at least they could actually happen. The first part of the amendment has to do with the, if you want to have a good discussion today, Mr. Chair, we can bring in all the mid-level licensure counselor people and the upper-level counselor, and they can have a discussion about where their lines of demarcation end. We spend a great deal of time on that, and I wouldn't wish that on you, probably. But the first section is the last, I think, of the agreements that they've come to about where the line should be drawn. And so it's that's the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Bradley.
Mr. Chair, actually I need to...
Representative Abler.
Mr. Chair, if I may, I'd like to actually have an oral amendment to my amendment, and that would be to delete lines 4 through 7. I guess there are more agreements going on than I remembered. So.
Okay, Representative Abler deletes lines 4 through 7 on page 1 from the A7 amendment. We'll just incorporate that into your amendment, Representative Abler.
Thank you.
You want to keep line 3, though, I assume, Representative
Abler.
That's
correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Okay, I had called on Representative Bradley. Representative Bradley, then Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Abler, just to be sure, because there was at first, some of the finance had a little bit of concerns about sort of long-term. Did you change the reductions, or is this just writing up the ones that you had presented previously?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bradley, this is the identical changes up the omnibus carries.
Okay, thank you.
We just track them in two places.
Representative Anderson.
How long, Mr. Chairman, how long are the temporary fee reductions for?
4 years.
They're all for 4 years?
Yeah, the yes, that's right. That's what they're not in statute. They're just going to be in session law because they're not permanent. The it's based upon the surpluses in the special revenue fund that are attributable to each of these different professional groups.
sorry, Representative Huntley?
I would support the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Other discussion to the A7 amendment?
Mr. Chair?
Representative Rukavina.
I was wondering, you know, being that we're reducing fees in the amendment, because we increase them everywhere else in law, I was wondering, Representative Weber, could we fund the methamphetamine program with this, like the surcharge on the parking tickets, or increase it maybe?
Mr. Chair?
Representative Abler.
These are actually going to be, in these cases, we're actually allowing the different licensees to have lower fees. So this is actually a fee-lowering bill, just to mark your calendar. Hope it's okay.
Representative Anderson.
How much is the total reduction?
Representative Abler.
I don't know where they, Mr. Marks might know how much they're reducing. Specifically, this just says what they're lowered down to.
But
Mr. Marks,
the net is about $374,000
annually, or biennium? Annually or biennium?
Okay,
for the biennium.
Other discussion.
And Mr. Just to point out, just to celebrate something, the social workers in particular enjoy the bulk of the fee reductions. If you remember, they had a heck of a time 4 years ago with fee increases that were up, I think, 44% or something, and they were just in, and those fee increases went into effect. And so this is a 20% reduction, and I'm happy that we could force the issue and get this down to this level. This was an accomplishment on the part of the people who worked on it. So.
Representative Vandeveer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Representative Abler, you get suspicious sometimes, and I guess I do too. This seems, what made you decide to do this?
To lower the fee.
Lower the
Representative
fee.
Abler.
Mr. Chair, the state special revenue fund is a part of the fund is allocable to the professional boards that collect these fees, and they're supposed to live on their own dime and not raise more or raise less. And so these different boards have surpluses in their accounts that allow them to lower their fees. These are requested by the boards, and Representative Huntley, I think, wants to add on.
Mr. Chair, each one of these boards does probably a couple of things, one of which is to send licenses to the people that are licensed, do all the paperwork that requires. But then they also all handle complaints, which are very costly. Lawyers get involved, and so that can be very expensive. And if they don't have a lot of complaints, then they don't spend a lot of money, and so there's a surplus in those funds. And the idea of all these licensing fees was that that was solely to be used to for that board to administer and for no other purpose. And if you allow excess funds to accumulate, people like us get start looking at those numbers and would like to spend it on something else. So I don't think that's fair to the people that paid these licensing fees.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Huntley, I agree with you. I had a situation where fees were collected and promised for a certain purpose, and they went poof. So it's probably good what you're doing here.
Representative Quinzing.
Thank you. And while we're on the discussion of a lot of fees, I noticed in the bill that, and I don't know, if, and it kind of pertains to the amendment too, that under the dentist language, it states that for dentist fees, that no fee may be refunded for any reason, which sounds like very strong language, and I could understand a lot of circumstances under which a fee would not be refunded, and that's in Section 4, Article 4. And then I'm looking back over fees for social workers and some fees that apply to what we're talking about here, and they qualify when the fee is not refunded. And I guess I was just wondering why there's this change or this new language in here for the dentist that absolutely under no reason the fees may be refunded.
Well, Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chair and Representative Flensy, and I can't give you the precise answer. What I do know is that all of the boards have approved these things, and all of the societies that represent that profession have approved these. And I will, just on the dentists, I just got done saying that these fees should not be used for anything else. Actually, the dentist came in and asked us this year to take some of their fees to fund a rural dentistry program.
Other discussion of the A7 amendment? Seeing no further discussion, all in favor of the A7 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. The A7 amendment is adopted. Representative Abler.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move A8 amendment, but this is actually a technical change now. Now the amendment put into the bill, extra language, just takes out the duplicative language out of statute.
Yes, members, this part of the language from the A7 amendment was already in the bill, and so when we adopted the A7 amendment, it's my understanding that we duplicated some language that was already in the bill, and this amendment takes out the duplicative portion of that language. Any discussion of the A8 amendment? See no discussion. All in favor of the A8 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The A8 amendment is adopted. Representative Abler, did you have another amendment?
No, Mr. Chair.
Representative Huntley, was there another amendment?
No.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was thinking there were three for some reason. Okay. Discussion 2, House File 1161 as amended. Seeing no discussion, all in favor of House File 1161 as amended, being recommended to pass and referred to the General Register, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. The bill is passed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
Next, we'll take up House File 2358. Representative Seifert. Representative Seifert here. Okay, members, we'll have about a 2-minute recess. We're in recess.
What happened to Marty? He was just here.
I was looking at Mindy and April.
You did mention
it.
Well, maybe because he was looking at me when I left.
I must have just, when I was, John Mindy's the one that brought up the needy, and then I must have thought you were looking at me as I wrote April. Because I don't remember even saying Larson. I did not
All the chairs are out.
This is the picture of the speech where I have no Republicans there and all Democrats here. Kind of a fun, it's a fun picture that I'm by myself in the chair. Well, they were all here. They were all over here. Yeah.
Oh yeah, you'd be right here.
Good thing I'm that way.
I know your grandfather and my
All right, now.
Not the point of that this morning, but.
All right, everyone, I'll reconvene the meeting. Representative Seifert moves that House File 2358 be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. And we're passing out the A1 amendment, which is something we need to add on to House File 2358 to deal with an appropriation issue. But while we're doing that, Representative Seifert, why don't you explain the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, this is a bill that was heard in the Jobs and Economic Development Opportunity Policy and Finance Committee. It's a very simple one-sentence bill, but very important. The more I talk to grocery clerks and people who patronize supermarkets and convenience stores, the more I think this is a good bill. It's basically disallowing taxpayer financing through the electronic benefits card of the tobacco or alcohol products. This was in the Senate members. It passed, I believe, 62-2. I don't know that that's considered controversial, but some people think it is. But I would question why we are taking money from our health and welfare budgets to pay for things that are to the detriment of people's health and welfare. I think I will leave it at that. Mr. Speaker, I did an appreciation to the DFL members who are listening to me this morning. There is a picture from House Photography of a fully panned chamber with all of them listening intently to me as the only person on my side. So I thought I'd just pass it around to get a kick out of it.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Solberg.
He may use that in his campaign for re-election, but we're going to use it against everybody else. We were sitting here trying to do the work, and the Republicans are all gone except for two.
But I'll be curious when I look at all of your faces just how intently you really were listening. Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chair, I was wondering if Representative Seifert could autograph that picture for us.
Only have one.
Representative Abram.
Mr. Chairman, having looked around the chamber during Representative Seifert's address, it appeared to me only his friends were left in the chamber.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Solberg,
does that mean a huge coming over to our side of the aisle? Is that what you're saying?
Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. How many, what's the, does everybody have this electronic card to use, or are a lot of these folks not using that? What's the split? Half of them or all of them?
Mr. Chair, I believe Ms. Martineau is here from the department, and she may have the statistics on that of how many people have EBT cards for purchases. I was thinking of total recipients, was it 72%? Is that how many? I don't know if it's everyone, Representative Earhart, that I know of is that eligible has access to EBT cards. I'm just not sure if everyone prefers to have benefits that way. It's probably the most convenient way of getting them because you can go to a cash machine and run it through and go buy whatever you want. I'm not saying it's bad things all the time, but...
Well, Mr. Chairman and Representative Seifert, I can't ever get that right. Sorry. If they can get cash in a cash machine, how are you going to monitor what they do, how they buy this? What is this a sieve, really, that we're creating here that half the people that are using these cards are going to not, or can, is there a way around it by getting cash and going by it? And
Mr. Chair, Representative Earhart, that's an excellent question. This certainly does not solve all the problems with this. What it basically does, if you go to a grocery store, Representative Gunther's store, for example, you can go through the supermarket, you can put in three cases of cigarettes and a couple cases of 3-2 beer, run the taxpayer finance EBT card through the machine and the taxpayers pay for it. I'm not under the illusion that people aren't going to catch on and go to a cash machine somewhere and do this, but I have heard from enough grocery clerks now after this bill has had a little publicity that it actually undermines public support for these public assistance programs, because if you have people standing in line or at the grocery clerk counter, even though this is not the norm, I'm not saying this is everybody doing this, but one out of 10 people does it. It adds to an unfortunate stereotype that the clerks are not happy about this, that they're standing there for 8 hours and people are coming through and doing this. And I gave a speech to Marshall High School here not long ago, actually several speeches to different classes. I had 7 students who were grocery clerks, and every one of them said they see this on a weekly basis. So it is a situation that's happening. As I said, the Senate adopted this 62-2. We shouldn't really have to have the discussion. I mean, I personally would like to have commodity cards where you can buy certain things and that's it, and not just cash out at the taxpayer's name and then just go buy whatever you want. But that's not what the bill in front of us does. It's just trying to send the message that we just don't think it's appropriate. So it adds a bump in the road, Representative Earhart, but I'm not under the illusion it's going to solve the whole problem.
Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not going to oppose this. I just said it phrases all kinds of things. Couldn't we just have the grocery clerks refuse to sell them cigarettes or alcohol on moral grounds, like the pharmacists, rather than I don't know. Let's pass the damn thing. I don't know.
Members, I've got some other people that want to speak, but let me first move the A1 amendment so we can get the bill into shape. Members, the A1 amendment basically puts in the appropriation language. The money for this bill was not carried in any other bill. Members, we have $392,000 on the bottom line right now in this committee that has not been spent. The claims bill is $46,000, and what this amendment would do is basically put the appropriation language in here and take $225,000 of that remaining $392,000. So just in terms of doing our accounting, I want members to understand where the money's coming from, and I would propose the A1 amendment to make sure we're properly accounting for the cost of this bill. Discussion to the A1 amendment. Representative Clark.
Mr. Chairman, you know, I know, Representative Seifert, you said that you brought this because you had a constituent who made a complaint. But I think you do promote stereotypes with this bill. And I think, as Representative Earhart mentioned, this is totally something anybody can get around. They don't even need to leave the grocery store. Maybe Representative Gunther will tell us if he has a cash machine in his grocery store.
Representative Gunther, would you like to yield?
I certainly will, Mr. Chairman. Representative Clark, yes, we do have a cash machine.
Thank you.
And yes, they can take their EBT card and get cash at the cash machine and go buy beer or cigarettes or whatever they want with that cash.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Clark.
My point is exactly that. This is just, I think this amendment, if it didn't cost any money, it would be one thing. But it cost $200,000, and this was in a committee where, I tell you, for $200,000, I just figured it out, we could give 100 kids a chance to work at Youth Build and get training, job training, and after school and summer employment. And I just find this does not do anything. Representative may have some constituent who's going to feel better because he passed this bill, but we don't have $200,000 to waste when we know that it's totally you can totally get around it. All you do is go to the cash machine, take that card, and then you use it for whatever you want. So unless you're thinking of following around people who are on public assistance and monitoring them, paying for an investigator to monitor whether or not they ever go to a cash machine and spend it on something that we don't agree with, I just think it's a super control, ineffective amendment that costs $200,000 we don't have to spend. And I can't tell you how painful it is to see something like this as a waste of money. We can send out messages, we can help people get help with their nicotine, with their addiction. I'd rather put this money into treatment. For treatment for people who are so addicted that they're buying tobacco or spending it on beer, and because it's not effective. This is totally ineffective. There is no way this works, and we don't have the money to waste. I just find it so offensive. And this came through the committee where we made all these terrible cuts to kids, child care. I just think you should tell your constituent that Representative Seifert that, you know, you have put in a bill and it got a good hearing and the message was sent and we spent a little money to tell people they shouldn't do this, but to spend the money on something that we all know in testimony here does absolutely nothing. It really does nothing. It's totally ineffective. And as much as I oppose smoking and want to see, you know, some limits on that, this is just like super control of some folks. And by the way, whenever you use the rhetoric, taxpayers' dollars, can we just remind you that people who are on public assistance also are taxpayers?
Discussion to the A1 amendment. Any discussion to the A1 amendment? Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple questions. We'll start there. Representative Seifert, I'm curious as it relates to the $25,000. Where is that coming from? Where's that number?
Is this on the fiscal note, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Representative Seifert.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Walker, I think the department may have the analysis of there's a description on the second page, Representative Walker, on the assumptions that are made. It says the department pays E-Funds, which is, I suppose, the company that runs the ATM thing, we estimate that there'd be an increase in the number of withdrawals, and this results in $25,000 per year. Now, you know, I don't understand why the taxpayers pay for the convenience of this business of going to a cash machine, and we want to have a zero fiscal note. We could say if you want the convenience of going to a cash machine to go buy things, then you pay the 56 cents, not the taxpayer. So if we want to do it that way, Mr. Chairman, I would certainly be willing to accept a friendly amendment from Representative Walker or someone else to flip for the convenience of having this ability to go to a cash machine, to have the person obtaining the convenience to pay for it.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Oh, no, you won't get me to do that. I'm not quite sure if members know how little individual families live off of anyway, and for them to even happen to, whether it's the state or the individual family, especially the 56 cents is a lot of money, and the amount of individuals that are in line purchasing their items and think that they have enough money, and you know, you can only guesstimate. I mean, how many of us have gone to the store and thought we were spending $50 and it turned out to be $75 all the time? And so that difficulty and that hardship, I would never support that. There's a couple of other things. You know, we met as a DFL caucus before this meeting, and I told my members that we'd be quiet. But I didn't see the fiscal note when I said that. The $200,000 is just quite frightening as an estimate. I'm sitting here thinking about my classrooms that have used and books that individual classrooms that aren't able to take a book home, and they're having difficulties as students. The amount of individuals that have their children in unsafe child care environments because it's cheaper to have someone down the street watch their children. And we can go down the list on how we could be spending this money, but it's a chunk of money. I think that I do have another question as it relates to how the department calculated the increase. And I can see this, the descriptions and things of that nature, but that's just still not helpful as it relates to the cost per case per month being a $30,000. Where'd that number come from?
Let me first say, before we answer that, I want to announce that we're not going to be taking up House File 1801, the Omnibus Gaming Bill, which was the fourth bill on the calendar today. There are some fiscal note issues that we're trying to work out on it, and we will take it up at our next meeting, likely Monday. And Representative Seifert, in regard to the question Representative Walker had posed, now, did you want to offer an amendment that you were asking her to offer, or...
Mr. Chair, I would certainly be willing to do that. It's just a matter of members don't like, I don't like it that as a fiscal note any more than anyone else. I thought it was a simple, common sense bill. You think it would work. You think it would make sense. I don't think anyone believes that someone should take taxpayer money and buy cigarettes and alcohol with it. And it's just common sense. Now, you know, we always have these. Representative Rukavina brought this up the other day, where if you have some issue that you want, and then you end up getting fiscal notes attached to it, even though the author has no intent of it. And most of it is a one-time cost on programming, Mr. Chairman. So it's not an ongoing cost. It's a one-time cost is the bulk of it. But it's up to the committee on how they want to handle that.
Okay, let me go back to Representative Walker and her question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, because the ongoing cost... The question that I have is the ongoing cost, and so I'm interested in hearing from the department on how they calculated this in a better description form.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm Ann Sessions from the Department of Human Services. The ongoing costs are associated with two things. The one is... There was an estimate that there would be an increase in the number of transactions that occur at an ATM machine, and that's at the 56 cents per transaction. So there was an estimate that there would be a small increase in the number of transactions there. In addition, the company that processes the card, the distribution of the funds or whatever, from that grocery line checkout, we were told that there would be an increase of 2 cents per month. I think it's because of the additional program related to you cannot use the cash for these items. So they have to put the software in, and what the government pays them would be 2 cents more per transaction a month. So one is associated with the ATM, and one is associated with the, you know, the machine that you and I use at the grocery store, the same as these cards are processed at.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have two questions. One, the department's basing it as a 10%. How many individuals would that be that is estimated to going to be using the ATM per year?
Mr. Chair, members, I believe we have about 40,000 MFIT participants, and I believe that right now there is an average, we pay for a certain number of transactions a month, and after that the individuals have to pay for them. And so it wasn't based so much on individuals as it was based on the number of transactions. The estimate was based on 10% of the transactions.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What is the current cost to the that the department sees currently for ATM usage?
Mr. Chair, I don't know that.
Can you get me that information before we go to the floor?
Excuse me, can I get you that information?
Before we go to the floor?
I should be able to, yes.
Okay, and another question, as it relates going back to the increase in cost per case, you really focused on the machines themselves. The case themselves would go to the county. Is that more with the social workers? That's how I'm...
Ms. Sessions.
Mr. Chair, Representative, once an individual, once the parent and the family are determined eligible, each month they would, the money that they're eligible for in cash or in food or in both, some individuals receive both, some individuals only receive one, it's put into an account that they can access by using this electronic card, either at an ATM machine or in the grocery line. So when I was talking about at the machines, it's because, you know, I would get that card and then I would use it at the grocery store or at an ATM.
Representative Seifert.
Let Representative Walker finish.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, Representative Walker.
Just last, I guess my closing thoughts would just be, I mean, we use the words common sense, and since we had fun on doing that on the email last night, it's frustrating to know that, especially when we know that individuals can get around it. And I understand your point of view as it relates to individuals not using the current dollars that we give them to take care of themselves in this manner. However, knowing that, they're going to find another way to do it. And for us to be spending this amount of money, even for this fiscal year, knowing the constraints that we have and all the other crucial areas, it's difficult for me to say, I agree with you and I support the bill. It's also difficult to say, yeah, these are the individuals, I mean, even the families that their students said that they've seen, the next question I would have asked them, were they the same families? You know, because there's this stereotypical picture out there that's not realistic. If you look at the amount of money families have to spend, those that are choosing to sacrifice their dollars and spend on cigarettes or even alcohol have an addiction that we need to be spending, as Representative Clark said, to deal with their treatment issues. But to spend $200,000 or even $30,000 in the following year, knowing individuals can find a way around it, I think it's really not fiscally responsible.
Representative Seifert.
Mr. Chair, I think those are very valid points, Representative Walker. And I just have a couple questions. I think what I may do, Mr. Chair, is have it laid over and have an amendment for next week. But I would like to ask Ms. Sessions the following question. Is the card charged, if you go to Representative Gunther's grocery store and buy formula and milk and cheese and bread, or is it ATMs only that the charge is done on? If you could answer that for me.
Mr. Chair, Representative Seifert, there are different fees charged. If you go to the ATM, that's the 56 cents for the first four transactions in a month, and most people use fewer than four. If you go through the grocery store line, what I understand is it's 4 cents per transaction that's paid. Or less than 4 cents?
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Seifert.
Mr. Chairman, I'm assuming that in a store situation, if you're at a Walmart or you're at a Gunther's grocery or whatever, that the transaction is going to be much more minimal than a regular ATM. You charge 56 cents. And I always thought the reason for these cards was you're going to go to Gunther's grocery and buy formula and diapers and those types of things. You're not going to the cash machine per se. And if you do need to go to the cash machine, you can do a large withdrawal for one time. I just think that the cumulative effect of this has the fiscal note blowing up, and I think there's a different way of doing this where we can kind of instill some responsibility and not blow the fiscal note up so much. So I think I'm going to work on some language and would request that we have this laid over for the next meeting, and I'll work on something. Mr. Chair, I think there's some legitimate concerns were brought up.
All right. House File 2358 is laid over. With that, members, watch your calendar.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Silver.
Mr. Chairman, I've been trying to talk Representative Seifert into applying
for a Bush Fellowship so he could go to Harvard. And one of the big case studies in Harvard is that they have is a cost-benefit analysis. For every vice that we have out in the public, there's always somebody that says, we're going to spend some money to cut that vice out, or we're going to pass a law to cut the vice out. And you know, every time we spend that money or pass a law to cut the vice out, they find another way to go around it. And then we pass a law to go cut that out, then we go around that. And pretty soon we got all these laws up here that we're trying to, we just have one more and they always get around it. And this is a good example of a good cost-benefit analysis. We should have had Representative Krinke in here having a cost-benefit analysis. And I want to actually compliment Representative Seifert for pulling the bill, because I think the points were made, were good points made, that in times we need to be able to spend our money wisely and not just on things that feel good. But thank you for allowing me to say that.
Thank you. Members, watch your emails. Likely Monday we will be having another meeting with some of the other bills we mentioned. With that, meeting adjourned.